Welcome to another WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. I feel like I have the dramatic deep voice going on because I'm coming off some illness here. And that illness is one of the many reasons that I haven't been able to hook up with my guest for probably like 3 weeks. We've been trying to get this thing going. I got Jacob on the line.
I've been itching to come back on. It's been a few months since we were back on. But I'm glad things finally worked out. We're both healthy and we now can talk some Cavs.
And we got those sexy deep voices.
It's better than really sick sinus voices.
Yeah, yeah. So we have the fortunate timing of coming on right after the Cavaliers lose in dramatic fashion, 109 to 105?
It was 4 points, so I don't know.
109 to 105. They lose to the Miami Heat, and honestly, it was just another game. Except that it was a measuring stick for Kyrie and the boys against one of the NBA's best teams. It wasn't really a showdown against LeBron for me, but it was encouraging to see them make a huge comeback in the fourth quarter. Dion Waiters hits a huge shot to put the Cavs up 101 to, I think, 100.
Mm-hmm.
They go on to lose. They go on to lose. But, you know, we're talking about Kyrie Irving. Dion Waiters is the second best player on the team. He's a rookie. And going up against LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and that whole gang, you know, they're both on short rest. Both, second night of back-to-backs?
For the Heat, I certainly know, and for us too. So, yeah, it's been a tough stretch for both these teams. This is 4 and 5 nights for the Heat. A lot of people were talking about how impressive it was that Wade was still able to do what he did in the final 6 minutes after playing all these games recently. And the Cavs have been busy since the All-Star break too, so... it was a lot of fun. Scott was on 923 The Fan earlier this afternoon.
With Joe Lull.
Joe Lull. Bowers was on the show about an hour later. And well, I think one of the points that Scott tweeted about later was that Cavs shouldn't put a whole lot of weight into this one game. As you said, it's just one game. And expectations and narratives and storylines are a tricky thing with a below 500 team that a lot of folks thought could at least potentially contend for number 8 spot, but were clearly out of it this season.
And storylines are a dangerous thing with the Bob Costasification of sports.
Of course, it's the sports centerization of everything in the media. So it's tough to say it's just one game, but it really is just one game that just happens to be against one of the top two teams in the NBA.
When Kyrie Irving and Dion Waiters. No, I mean, I know they're peppered with it all the time, but they know nothing of the whole LeBron thing, really.
They don't. It like, doesn't matter to them.
Not personally.
Doesn't matter.
Byron Scott barely knows any of it. He was here just for, you know, the tail end of it.
Mm-hmm. He was there just for show, practically.
Yeah.
But so, the point I was trying to say is that tonight's game was just a game against a really good team, and as a bad team that's still growing a lot of young players, you really have nothing to lose. You get blown out. You were expected to get blown out. We were 13-point underdogs tonight. And you show something, you have something to gain. You have nothing to lose from a performance like tonight. And so Cavs fans shouldn't be disappointed. They shouldn't have even let disappointment creep into their mind at all tonight. And you have to be very, very impressed by how they stuck with it. Anytime you have a 32-8 run in the second half against one of the undoubted top two teams in the NBA, the defending champions. That's impressive. 32-8 run in 11 minutes in the second half. All those things on the road.
Yeah, and it's the thing that LeBron probably in hindsight never gave enough thought to when he left Cleveland for Miami was that in his first year in Miami, every game they played against any team was going to be like the other team's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Memphis or Minnesota or the Cavaliers, everybody was gunning for them. And it just, you know, I think that's how comebacks like what the Cavs put on them late in the game happen. I don't think the Cavs are good enough for that run unless the Heat let up, consciously or unconsciously. But
it's a combination of a lot of things, too. C.J. Miles was unbelievable for that stretch. He just couldn't miss a thing. It was an 11-0 C.J. Miles run. And Spates had some really good baskets. 32-8 means bad offense and bad offense by one team and really good offense by the other team. There's a whole lot of things going over that whole stretch. But it was impressive.
I prefer to say
it's all in the Heat.
I prefer to just boil it down to plus minus. That's my favorite thing. If I can find a scrub who's plus 14, I'll use that, put it in the barrel, and fire minus. It.
What a polarizing stat in the NBA, I must say.
It's funny because I don't think anybody hates it more than Andrew.
You just looking at the ones for tonight. Spates was minus 12, and Ellington was plus 15.
Well, good. And Spates had a bad game. Ellington had a good one.
You hardly even noticed Wayne Ellington. He had one shot. C.J. Miles was the guard off the bench that scored everything, and Spates was awesome again. It's
useful, but you've got to use it contextually and with, you know, I don't know. I was almost going to say
that about PER and WAR in baseball, but I think plus minus is needs to really be contextualized. The other two, at least, are easy to understand and mean at least a little something. I think plus minus means very little, especially in kind of small sample size situations like this.
Yeah, plus minus is a nice confirmation if your eyes were already telling you something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think a guy had a particularly awful game defensively and offensively, and then you see he's a minus 12, you're like, well, of course, he looked like garbage. But in terms of just reading it and trying to draw conclusions from it, yeah, extrapolating for plus minus is kind of a dangerous thing.
It's the difficult world of basketball statistics to really say how much better or worse a team is with or without another player, and it's tricky.
Although it's apparently something worth undertaking. Ask John Hollinger, right? He got the high-paying gig.
PER was fun. I think there are ways to construct basketball statistics, but plus or minus is probably not the most fruitful avenue for doing so at the moment.
Who did he get the gig with? Was it the
Grizzlies?
The Grizzlies. Okay.
So that's why he was under such fire from Adrian Wojnarowski and others when the Grizzlies were making all those trades, the Rudy Gay move, the selling of assets to the Cavs, because the line that Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports said was, he's just a stats guy from ESPN, pretty much a statistician for a cable news network, and there's all sorts of stuff going on in Memphis. But
I'll have to dig up the Wojnarowski article about how the Heat were done when Indiana had their backs to the wall, and how the infighting they were never going. He's a melodramatic writer at times, and so if he wants to pick on the stats guy, I'm gonna pick on the drama guy too.
Oh, I 100% agree with you on kind of how he can be melodramatic.
But you know me, I don't want to pick on either one.
When I first read that Hollinger article, I just was like, okay, it seems like he's picking on this guy a little bit too much. I don't really disagree inherently with what Memphis did. They are in this big situation where they have to do something. So, I don't know, it's the media. It's all that sports centerization kind of stuff.
Speaking of which, this is going to go nowhere if you didn't read it, but did you see John's Twitter feed? He Jeffrey Luria.
Yes.
Did you see the open letter?
Yes. I didn't read it word for word, but I certainly skimmed it and saw the headlines about it.
What was your take on that whole thing? Because I know you're a follower of baseball. Obviously, that team didn't work last year. I mean, let's be honest. But
no.
Then again, to go from believing in that plan to selling it off to Toronto, basically in one fell swoop, and then there's the reported, you know, where he told Reyes to buy a house all 4 days before he was traded.
It's awful.
I mean, what's your take on that? The letter goes through and it says, hey, look, we've got a plan. The previous plan wasn't working. We've got money to spend. We're going to compete. We're going to do blah, 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 blah. And basically spinning the whole thing into, look, you guys are paranoid about nothing. The Miami Marlins are going to compete. We're going to be a baseball team to reckon with. We've done it before. We're going to do it again. You know, stay on board.
The Marlins, as an organization, deserve, and as a franchise history, deserve a fascinating all capital letters tag from John and I. We do this all the time for things we just feel are ridiculous or worthy of fascination. But the fact that they built from free agency up to win one title in 97, then sold off, then built to win one World Series title in 2003, then sold off, and then built to win one World Series title in 2012 and sucked and sold off during the middle of the season and have this giant new stadium that was paid for by all the citizens of Southern Florida. So the fact that he even claims that World Series title as being said that we know how to build a willing team Sure, you know, to build a winning Major League Baseball team, but a winning organization, that hasn't been consistent for Florida or the Miami Marlins in their history. I'd have very little kind of subjective or objective appreciation for what Lurie has done as building an organization in his times there. I don't know how anybody can give him benefit of doubt with his letter or all the stuff that he's been doing.
And how brutal is inconsistency? I mean, as Tribe fans, as Tribe followers, we know this. It's not so much that, you know, they lose. It's the continual losing. It's the following up good years with awful years, not knowing. A regular trajectory, a predictable trajectory for a team, you know, even it has to start at the bottom once in a while. If it continues to kind of guide itself upwards little by little over time, I think people kind of deal with it a little bit better. Not knowing, it might as well just be bad all the time.
Yeah, I'm not really exactly sure how people can consider the Marlins a good organization. They, you know, they've, like I said, they built up to win those two World Series titles and have been pretty awful consistently regardless outside of those 2 years. It's not been an organization model. It's not been organization success.
Well, and now, of course, the next question in standard sports talk radio is, okay, so would you trade what the Indians do for two World Series titles?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
Like, I want to believe and I want to give the benefit of the doubt, and I grew up loving the Indians so much, and certainly as a stats person who's been involved in a lot of the Moneyball talk over the years and such, I think that Antonetti and Shapiro are doing, generally the really good jobs. They've certainly haven't made the greatest of trades or draft moves in the last 5 to 8 years or so. But I continue to give them the benefit of the doubt, especially when you look toward building up right now at this point in time. I haven't been overtly critical because I don't think they're really doing awful jobs. I think they're doing the best they can with a lot of different situations. But would I trade all that kind of progressive analysis and stats and all that kind of stuff for two World Series titles and consistency? Maybe. It's eh.
I mean, it'd be fun to celebrate. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not something you can believe in any more than trying to believe in the Tribe.
But that one title would still feel really cool, even if, like, all the other years we hate our lives.
Yeah.
You know. But weren't we talking about Cavs and LeBron? I love talking about Cavs. It's Cavs season.
It goes all over. It's also spring training, baby.
Yeah.
And I just said baby. I hate when I do that. Because I never say that. Why would I even say it once?
What if your wife caught you saying that?
As long as I'm talking to you, I don't think she'll mind. All right, so the Cavs, obviously, I'm not buying the whole LeBron and 14 thing yet. I know it's like a real storyline or whatever, but we've seen this play out once already where LeBron likes to own the storyline. He likes to play it out. He likes the talk. He likes the drama. I also hate the word drama, but it's impossible to avoid that word when talking about LeBron and his free agency or impending free agency. He likes it. Are you buying, or are you just kind of waiting around for a little bit?
Two things. You used melodrama earlier when talking about Adrian Wojnarowski.
I have no problem with melodrama. I don't like drama, like in the reality TV kind of way.
All right. Okay, then. Etymology. Fascinating. But I had my... I live in my parents' house, full disclosure. I'm a fresh out of college kid. But my parents have some friends over watching the Oscars right now. And Oscars, prognostication, all that kind of stuff, they're talking about LeBron because the Cavs and the Heat were playing. And they asked me, what are the odds? You know, radio show style. Like, what are the actual odds that you see LeBron coming back in summer 2014? And my dad started off saying 10%. 10%. I don't really buy it. He hasn't... think any of this stuff is true. It's just garbage. It's just, you know, whatever.
I was going to say 15 the minute you brought it up, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's closer to 25. And other friends of my parents were saying 40. I've seen tweets and rumors, whatever, it's 50-50. 25 is kind of saying, yeah, I think there's something there. If there wasn't something there, we wouldn't see as much as we kind of do. Do I really think it's going to happen at this point? Eh, probably not. But would it really, really shock me? Yeah, we've seen all this stuff. LeBron's LeBron. You never really know. And I don't know.
And that's the real point. He doesn't know.
Probably not.
He has no idea. There are too many more pieces to be shifted around and moved in many different directions. I fully believe that he had every intention of going to the Knicks at certain points of his impending free agency.
There's lots of other narratives or storylines behind what could happen between now and then, whether the Heat win two titles or three, or they lose in the finals both years, or the Cavs get another good draft pick or something. There's all these other sorts of logic puzzles you could put.
What if he breaks his leg next year?
Yeah, there's no way we can really know what's going to happen in 15 months or so. But right now, just given all the rumors that continue to be out there, 25% is what I had. So he's the greatest player in the world. it's amazing how phenomenal he's playing. He's just on another level right now. He's only person that's at all close in the world in basketball is Kevin Durant. And that's a stretch and a huge glowing words about Kevin Durant saying he's even close to LeBron the way he's been playing. So would I love to have him back? Yeah, he's the best player in the world. I like the girlfriend analogy. I know that people talk about a lot, the ex-girlfriend kind of thing for LeBron. But he's the best player in the world. And if it's objectively, would you want him on your team? Yeah, sure.
Well, and ultimately, that was what it came down to in that summer. That's what it's come down to for pretty much every NBA player we've seen over the last 5 years, if not even longer, is it's all selfish. It's all what's good for them. So if that's the way this whole thing's going to roll, well, what's good for me as a Cavs fan? And that's the one thing I've maintained 100% since, the first week after LeBron left. I'm not an NBA fan. I'm a Cavs fan. And so if it's good for the Cavs, okay. It's a little bit different, but, some people have asked, well, what if the Browns picked up James Harrison? Would you root for him?
It's the Browns.
It's a different game too. Basketball is so strange like that. I mean, if LeBron is on the Cavs, you can't root for the Cavs and not also root for LeBron. But football has so many more players and two sides of the ball and everything else that I think I could be a Browns fan and still not really root for James Harrison.
It'd be a weird kind of concept to not like to really, really dislike and not root for a certain player on your favorite team. I'd be thrilled to see how that kind of would work out.
I kind of felt that way about Trot Nixon, and it made it easy because he wasn't very good.
But I would still root for him to do well. It's still the Cavs or the Indians or the Browns.
Yeah, but not for him, for me.
It's, different kind of fandoms and things like that. I'm a huge NBA fan. I love watching the NBA. I'm not as big as Ben or as Scott or as Brendan Bowers, but I love watching basketball season. It's probably my favorite sport, I would say, to watch just random games of. I'm a huge fantasy football person. And I grew up loving baseball, and I've worked in baseball, but I can't flip on a random Yankees and Blue Jays game and really say I'm having a good time. I can flip on a Heat Grizzlies game and really get into it and really start analyzing things.
Even more than Monday Night Football?
That's mostly just fantasy football. It's not really that I'm enjoying the product. I'm just figuring out what's going on with my fantasy football team. I enjoy personally watching the NBA more than I enjoy watching any other major sport.
And why is that?
I think it's that product of the one-on-one kind of nature of the NBA that makes it so polarizing for fans. You can just see a guy go one-on-one and dominate the game like LeBron kind of does. It's just a lot of fun. It's very kind of pop culture-y. It's hip. It's exciting. Those last few minutes really mean a lot, but also the rest of the game for me is still a lot of fun to look at the benches and all those kinds of other aspects of the sport. Baseball, of course, is boring. I've been told that my whole life, even though I still love it a lot. And football, when I grew up in Cleveland, I never quite got into it that much. My avenue back into football was really a lot of fantasy football. It was just the nature of fandom for me in the mid to late 90s.
Well, and baseball is a lifestyle sport. I mean, mm-hmm. it's the best live sport. It's the best talk AM radio sport or play-by-play sport on radio. Although we're going to have some play-by-play on FM this year, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
But, you know, I could sit at a baseball game and keep score and keep myself entertained and stuff like that. But flipping through...
But yeah,
TV,
that was where I was getting on TV.
Yeah, you know, flipping through on TV, I would much rather flip through on TV and just pick up a random NBA game. It, you know, all things being equal, fantasy football for me is a huge deal, and that's why normally I would flip on a random football game or pick up Red Zone or watch Monday Night Football. But
what about stretch baseball, where we're getting to the end of the season and games are important and there's a huge matchup? I mean, playoff baseball is just like pins and needles. The question is whether you can care enough or not.
I think, you know, it's all things being equal. For me, it's still basketball. If it's the stretch run of basketball or it's a playoff game of basketball, like those epic Bulls-Celtics overtime games a number of years back. Oh, I loved every minute of those. Just like, you know, pins and needles, all things being equal, a playoff baseball game, like those Cardinals games of the past few years and such.
But the first three quarters of an NBA game are meaningless more times than not. The beginning of a baseball game is probably way more important than the first quarter of a basketball game.
But it's the pins and needles. It depends what's going on. It depends upon the pace of the game to a certain extent, whether it's high scoring or low scoring, both in basketball or in baseball. You know, if it's a low scoring playoff game and it's the kind of like those Cardinals games have been over the past few years or the Rangers games have been over the past few years, you know, those first six innings don't really mean a whole lot. It's what's going on when they're going back and forth and it's extra innings and all that kind of stuff. If it's a blowout game where five runs in the top of the fourth decides it, it's not going to be entertaining the rest of the way. The same thing can be in basketball when it's a blowout and the fourth quarter doesn't matter.
Oh, all right. I still don't totally buy it, but okay.
It's just it's me personally. I'm not trying to, you know, push any agendas. It's just for me, I really like watching basketball.
All right. Well, let's get back to baseball. Get back to baseball. So obviously the Indians have made some crazy improvements. One of the biggest storylines for the Indians last year, unfortunately, was the lack of attendance. And I'm just curious. I mean, have the Indians done enough? I mean, I know they were saying that the season ticket line and one day was as busy as, you know, a week or a month, or I can't remember what the stat was, but obviously they were reporting some increased activity. I just wonder how much are they still going to have to kind of go crazy in the standings here early on to garner those mid to late season ticket sales, or have they done enough where they've already captured it?
What I would say, I guess, for full disclosure again, is I wrote my undergraduate honors thesis on minor league baseball attendance. So for the next week or two, I'm hoping to research more to do a Northeast Ohio-focused baseball attendance article of the diff for waiting for next year. So baseball attendance is one of my things, and I love researching it and wrote this 70-page thesis with all these sorts of tables and regression analysis and all that for college. For the Indians right now, yeah, it's been a really positive offseason for them so far. But do I think they're ever going to, you know, hit 35,000 average anytime in the near future or anytime maybe ever? Probably not. Looking at the last 8 years, they've averaged 23,000. And the last 4 years, it's been 21,000. What are the realistic expectations for the season, given that they've averaged 21,500 over the last 4 years? Maybe they could get it back to what it was around 2005, 2006, when there was still like that buzz and such around the city from those playoff teams. Yeah, maybe. But I think to a certain extent, in baseball in Northeast Ohio, you've seen a lot more teams come up. And there's Lake County Captains and the Akron Arrows and Lake Erie Crushers. There's lots of other options. The Indians aren't as good. The Browns are back in town. I think the ceiling for Indians attendance has dramatically been lowered over the past decade since they had those incredible attendance runs. So,
and I don't disagree, but do you think that they're going to be above that embarrassing level that they were in kind of the last 2 years?
Maybe. I think no matter what, they will kind of be like the Indiana Pacers to a certain extent. where the Pacers, even when they're having some success, it's still low because their ceiling for success isn't that high. They have such a small stadium in Indiana for the Pacers that even when they're drawing 90%, they're still going to be in the bottom 15 of the NBA in attendance. And to a certain extent, the Indians this coming season, it will be improved. I don't think there's any doubt in people's minds about that. But it will still be bottom half of Major League Baseball. Maybe it won't be as sheer depressing as it has been at times, but it's still going to be, you know, below average.
Yeah, and the, you know, getaway day, whatever, I don't really care about those games, but it would really be nice to have the Saturday, the Sunday, the Friday nights back where the Indians are drawing enough that the place feels loud and not overrun with opposing fans.
I think it could happen. Like, it's a delicate balance. It's whether you think 20,000 or 28,000 is that a noticeable difference in the stands to say that it's a lot of vibrancy and it's exciting as opposed to it's really depressing and it's Cleveland and it sucks. So that's probably, you know, the logical range of expectations. Last year they were around 20, and if they're doing amazing and things are as positive as they've been in the last decade, they'll be around 20 to 30.
How much do you think the Indians are irritated with Major League Baseball? The Indians have, let's see, 4 games against the Yankees and 3 against the Red Sox in April.
Yeah.
Could they have been any crueler to the Indians organization with that schedule?
That's pretty rough. And what I'm doing for my attendance
research.
First
of all, tell everybody why that's so brutal.
Well, yeah, what I'm doing with my attendance research for the article in the next few weeks is looking month by month at attendance for the Northeast Ohio baseball teams. So looking at the Indians over the past 4 years, they've averaged 21.5, but they've averaged 13.5 on non-opening day April games. And looking at the last 8 years, it's about 16.5 on non-opening day April games, because opening day is a whole other, you know, bucket. They're putting 35, no problem, on those kinds of days. Usually sold out. So April games are brutal in Northeast Ohio. It's the same for the Akron Arrows. Looking at their month by month, they never get more than, you know, 4,000. In the past 4 years, it's been closer to 2,000 in April games. It's awful. You're never going to get good attendance. And some of the biggest factors of attendance for Major League Baseball teams is seeing the Yankees or the Red Sox. It's more about the competition to a certain extent than it is in minor leagues, where it's just fireworks and such and dollar dogs or whatever. So those still are factors for the Indians, but it's getting those teams like the Yankees and Red Sox in July and August, when it's warm outside and fans would actually consider randomly going to a Tuesday game because the Yankees. Or it's whether it's those Yankees fans that are coming in and stealing your stadium.
And that's the thing. The marginal increase for the Yankees in April is nowhere near as big as the marginal increase, the bump that they would get from the Yankees in, say, June.
I would – percentage-wise, might be actually greater in April, because if the average in April is 15,000 and they get 24 because it's the Yankees, well, in June they're getting 26 and it's – 30-something, you know, I think percentage-wise it will make potentially a bigger difference, but, it's bigger numbers when you're speaking of June, July, in my mind. So it's just the ceiling isn't that high because it's April. What's the best-case scenario is like 25,000. In July, it could be 35, but it's your usual difference. It's still you're a boost of 10 or 1,000, but it's that percentage difference. I don't know if that made a whole lot of sense, though.
Well, you heard,
I speak quickly in math terms sometimes.
When you also heard how definitively I said that there's no way, and meanwhile I didn't do any research. I just said it because,
yeah,
you know,
percentage. It's just percentage wise. Yeah, it would probably make a little more of a, you know, incremental difference in April, but it's just smaller ceiling. It's, you know, it's not going to make a big difference to have the Yankees in April and it would in July because it's just bigger numbers. And that's going to hurt in the bottom line of the season average.
Right.
So April is awful for attendance. I can continue to get a closer look at where the Indians will be based on how well they do in April, which is still going to be bad and it's going to be depressing. And we're going to see a lot of articles this April because fans are going to be expecting them to surpass their season averages in previous years just in April alone, which is completely impossible for any Northeast Ohio team. They're going to draw, you know, 60% of what they do for the season in April.
Right. Right. Well, and do you put any credence in my theory that Indians fans are actually kind of smart? Because the last couple of years when the Indians were in first place and leading the division for a while, that Indians fans didn't just jump on the bandwagon because they knew better than to believe in that team.
That's fair. Yeah.
So, and that's my question. So if the Indians spend some time in first place this year with Swisher and Bourne, et cetera, it makes me wonder, did the Indians front office do enough to make people believe that this team, if they are successful early, is not just fool's gold?
And maybe. I don't know. I don't think it even matters.
I don't expect you to have the answer necessarily, but let's walk through it. I mean, I just wonder.
I don't think it necessarily matters. Let's go back for a second here about this comments Mark Shapiro made. I know you had rediscussed them recently on a podcast, but he made those comments before all these signings that fans, they pretty much said, why bother coming if you don't care about the fun atmosphere of a baseball game?
If it's only about winning, then this isn't for you.
Yeah. And
I didn't disagree with him. I didn't disagree with him, by the way.
Motivational factor. I don't disagree with him. I 100% disagree with the fact he said that. Don't say that. You can think that. And there's undoubted it goes through the minds of any front office of any sports team. Don't say it. Yeah, it's just boneheaded. But do I think it will really matter? Not necessarily, really. It's just that positive energy and PR in the area that will boost attendance. And the Indians have definitely capitalized on it in the past few weeks and months. And if they're winning, yeah, that helps. But will the average fan go necessarily because they're winning? I don't know. I think they'll go because they're hearing about them and that's fun. And they're hearing about them because it's winning. It's a cycle in that way, you know. So if they're into it, I think because this continued positive offseason vibe, yeah, it's more likely that it could be a little more sustained success than these past years when there was no offseason energy that led to some fleeting success in the regular season that led to some better PR in the area that led to better attendance. So, yeah, it could be a little more meaningful this year if there's a little boost in attendance because of that.
All right, so let's finish this off.
Yeah.
Attendance, quality, PR, marketing. Were you one of the guys who was killing the Indians for trying to claim Cleveland as a tribe town?
No, I don't kill them. I don't care. It's a PR stunt. If it gets you in the newspapers and it gets people talking about you generally in a positive light, sure, that's fine. I don't care really what it is.
It's not
a tribe town.
Oh, stop it. It is.
It's a Brownstown.
It's both. It's both.
It doesn't matter to me. I'm not like I don't feel passionately about it. It's a PR. It's a slogan.
No, I don't feel passionately about it either. Except,
but I don't think it is a tribe town.
Except it is. It's not a Yankees town. It's not a Red Sox town. It's not a Blue Jays town. Tiger's town.
That's fair. I don't disagree with you, Benny.
And that's why that's the hypersensitive Browns fans, like, look, we got to mark our territory in June and July, too. Like, what are you?
That's 100% fair. You know, I agree with that. It's important to mark this in the baseball eye as if you're in Cleveland and you're talking baseball, you're talking tribe.
Yeah, and they're actually better off in Cleveland in terms of their sport than – a lot of people might argue that Cleveland is a Pittsburgh town. It's a Steelers town. There's no encroaching baseball team to the Indians the way there are football teams encroaching on the Browns.
In terms of like Bengals and Steelers?
Yes.
Then there's, because when you look at it, baseball, didn't they do that fascinating study of like football teams? I saw that all over the place. Right. Like football teams and like, and plotting it on every county.
Yeah, it was Facebook. It was a Facebook thing based on...
If they did that for baseball, you might see something interesting because you wouldn't see Pittsburgh and Cincinnati encroaching on Northeast Ohio. You'd see New York and Boston. So it's still other forces that shouldn't be here, but they're not as geographically aligned with Northeast Ohio.
Do you think that Boston and the Yankees encroach on the Indians the way that the Steelers encroach on the Browns?
No, it's not the same way.
It's not even close.
But they're still there.
Right, but that's kind of my point. So for Browns fans to get all, I guess it makes sense that they would get so defensive because their territory needs to be marked.
Yeah,
it's in danger constantly from Steelers fans.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a fair point in terms of the mindset that would go into saying this is only a Browns town. This is number one Browns town. Everything else is everything else and shouldn't be marked as it because we are the Browns and we must say we are.
But my favorite question for all the people who want to say, well, what do you mean it's a tribe town? What would you like the marketing message to be? What are the alternatives?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a marketing manager, so. But
if it gets people talking about the Indians in a positive light and it gets, you know, the average fan who might not consider going, like I've still been going to lots of games over the last 8 to 10 years. The average fan hasn't. That's the people you need to reach.
Well, and that's all the proof that I need that it truly is a lifestyle game too, because my attendance was way down once my son was born. But then last year when I felt like he was old enough for me to kind of drag him to partial games on Sundays, I made it to 5 games.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't have to do with, you know, whether the Indians were good or not. I just wanted him to be, you know, our seats are close to right field. So I wanted him to be able to yell chew at the top of his lungs. You know, obviously this year it'll be somebody else, but it'll be Stubbs. But
and for me, I've been in college the last 4 years or traveling lots of the summers the past few years. So I'll go to significantly more games this year because I'll actually be home. But all things being equal, I would still go to the same amount of games, whether they were good or bad, or this was 5 years ago. And it was that sort of level of excitement in the area, which there was none.
Well, and that's the thing. The sports fans are going to go to a few games no matter what. And instead of, like, say, 5, mm-hmm. if they were really, really good and competitive, I might go to 8 to 10.
But the marginal difference that the Indians make up in terms of the bad attendance year or a good one is not with the people who write for a Cleveland sports website.
Right, exactly.
It's for the people who are at my house right now who are talking about the Oscars and just kind of prognosticating about LeBron just because it's a topic du jour that they see in the front page of the sports page while they're going through the business pages and stuff like that. That's the people that the Indians need to reach to make a marginal difference in attendance.
How funny is it when somebody gets to talking to you about sports and they don't understand the dynamics of a salary cap or something like that?
It happens all the time.
How do you play it? How do you play it? Because I'm sure everybody plays it differently. I'm sure Scott plays it differently than Rick, plays it differently than Jacob and Craig.
Well, you know me, I'm a very mathematical person, so I try to structurally kind of break it down in like 2 or 3 sentences tops. Just whatever argument it is, whether it's people at work saying, oh, it's so exciting, the Indians. Yay, I heard they had a new player. Or, you know, or it's a family friend or somebody talking about LeBron going to the Cavs. So it depends upon next year. We got to sign other people, right? We got to keep getting better and better. No, you got to keep saving up salary cap in order to sign LeBron. So it's those kinds of things I just try and structurally break down in like a sentence or two to say, okay, this is how it works. This is what actually matters is who the person we signed is. And just do it that way and not try to like say, oh, no, you're wrong. I just try to, you know, break it down quickly.
All right. Last, I said that other thing was the last thing, but now the real last thing. What are your Oscars predictions, seeing as you're having an Oscar party that I wasn't invited to?
I don't particularly have many. I trust Nate Silver on this a lot.
I didn't see Nate Silver was weighing in on the Oscars.
Well, he personally wasn't weighing in. He was doing his formula. You know, he had a formula based on what other award shows had given out as the winner and as the nominees and their track record of prediction from that award show.
And just for the record,
the Oscars.
That is Nate Silver weighing in, by the way.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like, yeah, it's Nate. My friend and I texted about Nate and we just use Nate as, you know, she gets it entirely when I say that, oh, Nate said this or Nate did this. He's kind of like my secret friend kind of in a way. We talk about him like that. I don't know. But it's Nate. But yeah, he wasn't actually saying what he thinks.
No, I got you. Happened. So what did he say?
It seemed like a pretty much shoo away that Argo will win. It's interesting that Affleck wasn't nominated for Best Director. Let's see here.
Any of the flicks? Did you see any of them?
I saw maybe half of them. I saw Django. I didn't see Argo or Lincoln and a few other of those. But, you know, I saw maybe half. It
Zero Dark 30? Year.
I saw that one.
I saw that one in Django. So
I saw Django, yeah.
My winners are down to those two.
They're both enjoyable. I really want to see more. I love movies. Movies and, like, movie trailers is just one of my things. I could watch movie trailers all day. Like, if I'm sick, that's just what I'll do all day. But any thoughts or things? Oh, I saw Les Mis. So, you know, I saw half of the
You couldn't make me see that one.
I was in California with some family friends, you know. I'm a sucker for musicals, too. It's a thing. I'm weird.
Did you see Dreamgirls?
No, I haven't. What's Dream? I think I saw the trailer for that, but no, I didn't see it.
Okay. I sat around. I ruined that one for the entire group of people I was with. Because it's like, hey, let's take Motown. Let's run through a filter of Broadway. And then we'll just ruin Motown music.
Movies are fascinating. But I watched tons of trailers, but I did not see that movie. But do you have any personal thoughts or projections for this evening?
No, I don't. I don't. That's why I was asking you, because I've only seen two of them. I haven't seen Lincoln, and especially now that I've got a second kid, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I guess of the nominees for Best Picture, there looks like there are 9, and I saw 4. So an average year for me or so. I would hope I've seen more, but.
Well, all right. Well,
people get to make fun of us in the morning too if we're wrong on any of these.
And I think next week I will be. I think there's a panel with Nate Silver.
Stop this. Can you like refrain from emailing us about Sloan for the rest of the week?
Next week,
because I'm the only one who like keeps saying stop it.
It's gonna be. I'm gonna tell everybody it's gonna be a shortened week next week. There won't be a lot of podcasts because I am heading to Boston where I went to college. Well, no, not where I went to college, because that was Boston University. But MIT Sloan
Sports Analytics Conference.
Analytics Conference.
My dream.
Are you going to keep interrupting me, Jacob?
Yes, because I'm probably going to block you on Twitter next week. I can't stand the fact that you're going, and I really want to go, and like all the writers I read that consistently are going to be there. It's like a dream of mine to go there.
Well, and the Cleveland Browns' newest analytics hire, Alec Shiner, will also be there.
I believe I think Brent Stelick also has some sort of profile with them or something. The new executive vice president with the Browns too.
From the Padres.
Yeah. Okay. I think he also has some sort of profile with them too. So, you know, it's all where this sports stats guys are these days. Kirk Goldsberry, who had this fascinating article last year on using all the different spots on the court and analyzing basketball players based on all those spots on the court. He got famous because of his article at Sloan, and all the other people like Cuban and Daryl Morey from the Houston Rockets are there, and they just sit around and talk sports for a few days in Boston.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. I will. I think we're going to turn the tables and somebody's actually going to interview me about that. Hopefully I'll have at least a couple of posts that are worthwhile coming out of that. And hopefully it makes all my writing better. You never know. it could be one of those life changing things where I come out a much better sports, analyst. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm jealous. I'm so jealous.
Well,
I know you have a blast.
It's time to make your plans for next year.
I would love to. We'll see. Work.
All right. Anyway, this has been another waitingfornextyear.com podcast for Craig Lindell and Jacob Rosen. We'll talk to you next time.
For next year.